kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I'm your host, Joe. Cole's going to be here later on with the party cast. I'm not feeling that great, so let's just get to the shit. Tim Ekibis is here. Tim, how are you doing?
I'm okay. Well, you know, I am back to day job this week, which is no good. It's no good.
No.
I mean, like, I don't know. It's just that. Everything is still bad. It might not be bad at work right now, but it's still bad in the world.
Yeah.
It is not safe out. I mean, like, I guess my news feed, I guess, in the past few days has shifted away from... no, that's not true. I guess it's been shifting more back and forth between protest coverage and... just COVID reminders of it spiking up in several other states as New York continues to phase in openings.
Yeah.
Which, you know, they have their plan, but it's still just like...
People are treating this as like the virus is gone now. It's not fucking gone.
It's not gone. Like, we can reopen. We are in a position where we can reopen so long as people follow the rules and wear they masks and keep they distance and minimize, you know, continue to do the things they've been doing more or less for the past 3 months. But it seems to me like people aren't doing that.
No, they are not.
Some are, some aren't. It's some are choosing to, some are not. So I don't know how things are going to go. I am not confident that, you know, I am not confident. Obviously, we're not over with it. Like, as a country, like, it's still in real bad shape.
Yeah.
People used to sit there and be like, oh, well, it's just New York and California where people are dying, so we don't have to worry about it. Well, joke's on you now, fucking South Carolina. Joke's on you, Georgia and Texas and Florida and your open beaches. Like, get out.
Fucking Florida.
Things are okay at the moment in New York, but there's still, you know, massive amounts of uncertainty as to what's going to happen in the fall. You know, there is some work to be done at my work. Things that need to be done, maintenance that needs to be done, things that need to be cleaned up and whatnot. But just doesn't feel good. It just feels like we're back because they can legally have us back. And looming, and you know, now my child has to be in daycare, and now my wife might be going back to her work site soon. So, you know, we were hunkered down for 90 days and things felt pretty good, and now very suddenly, like, everyone is being possibly exposed in a much more significant way. Man, sorry to start out the podcast on a downer.
It's happy days for all. I mean, I'm not feeling that great to begin with. Ashley ended up calling off work last night, and I haven't been feeling that great. I do have a new addiction, though.
Yeah?
Yeah. Have you heard of the website Mercari?
Mercari.
Yeah.
Oh, that's called
Mercari. It's like an...
It's called like Mercury, except wrong.
Mercari. It's basically like eBay, and it's easy and it's quick, and I've made a few hundred bucks already.
just selling stuff?
Yeah.
Nice. Might have to keep that in mind there.
Yeah, I've listed a handful of stuff. I sold my Fire Emblem Fates from the 3DS, made 200 bucks on that.
Oh man, yeah, that is a prize. That is the reason why I bought the special edition for whatever that one was that came out last year that everybody loved and was like my fourth favorite game of the year.
Three Houses.
That one. Yeah, that one. Yeah, that's exactly why, because I missed out on the Fates Super Pack. And I was like, motherfucker! That kind of... Any freaking Nintendo First Party Collector's Edition, like, those are pretty much the Collector's Editions I go in on these days. Because they don't seem to make a lot. They are actual limited, and because, you know, Nintendo fans are fanatics, they be in demand.
Yeah, just a little. It's a bitch trying to actually find stuff, and it bothers me that Nintendo doesn't bring the good stuff to America. Yeah. Like, look at the European Xenoblade Chronicles, where they got a steelbook and a vinyl record.
Because of the steelbook, I knew that that was about to get...
God damn right, that steelbook. I wanted it so bad. We didn't get it in America, so I just went digital with the game. Fuck it.
Yeah, I went and I bought the European release of, whatchamacallit, Ni No Kuni 2, because that was a much better set than the American version. And the American version, like, that dropped like a rock in price. But, like, yeah, the European version was much cooler. It had, like, a music box in it, and I think there's a vinyl in there. It was much cooler.
I still have my European Dead Rising or Dead Island Riptide.
Nice.
That had the severed head torso.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have too much dumb shit.
You know. Yeah. It's like Persona, like special editions are always something that I get because I'm a Persona collector, and then like Nintendo stuff, and that's usually it. Every now and then I'll spring for like a deluxe edition if the word soundtrack is involved.
But I'm a whore for steelbooks. That's obvious. I fucked up on that Mercari site because I saw a listing for The Outer Worlds with a steelbook for $35. I was like, wow, that's not that bad. So I ordered it and I got it in, and it was literally a listing for just the steelbook. So I feel like a fucking moron.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
Ashley wanted to punch me in the throat.
Yeah.
Hey, the joys of not reading, right?
Yeah, you got excited, man. You saw that steelbook and with the game, you're like, oh, that's perfect, that's great. And then you just like didn't take that moment to like read the fine print, which
bit I meticulously me in the ass. Do
as a long time. After having done eBay for 2 decades,
yeah, you'd think I would know by now.
I think you would know, but yeah, it's like, especially like people on there when they're selling games, they're selling repros, lots of repros on there, lots of games sold with like just the case or just the manual or, you know, whatever, just little things on there. Like if it's too good to be true, it probably is. Though
yeah.
That steelbook, yeah, I might have assumed that the game came with that. And then you probably checked back at the listing and you were like, God damn it.
Yeah, pretty much. It's a gorgeous steelbook though.
Well, okay, well, at least there's that.
Yeah. I mean. And it's on Game Pass, so technically I could still play it.
Yeah, it's not a total loss, so...
8 minutes, by the way. 8 minutes. We mentioned Game Pass.
Oh, there we go. Sweet.
Yeah.
Get those nickels in.
Check your office pool. 8 minutes.
Jeez. What am I doing? I am, speaking of things that we've mentioned every episode lately, I am working on downloading my itch.io bundle stuff.
They finished with what, like $8 million?
$8 million.
That is ridiculous.
Yeah, and like and over 1,600 items in the pack. So like, yeah, I'm down. Like, there's tabletop stuff in there. Like we mentioned, assets, like just tons of games. So I'm just trying to collect it all. You know, if I see there's a lot of tabletop stuff I am finding the more I go through here. Ooh, and this game has a soundtrack with it. Look at that.
Let's download that.
That's Dreaming Sarah. Yeah, so it's like if I see something that jumps out, I will put it in a folder. You know, I'm trying to sort things as I go, which is mixed success, but I'm trying. You know, it's like, oh, okay, this is a tabletop thing. I'll make a folder for all the tabletop stuff. If there is, you know, try to herd the adventure games into one folder. If, like, I see something that especially catches my eye, I will, I will put that in a particular folder to kind of move it to the top of the pile. But it's just neat seeing like all these, like just all these games that I now own.
Yeah.
And today, actually, Humble Bundle is doing.
I was just there. About to bring that up, that Humble has their own bundle now.
Yeah. It's not 1,600 games for $5, but
no, it's, but it's still really good. $30 gets you like 70 games, something like that.
There's a bunch of games.
Is it that many? No, I don't know. It's like 70 comics.
There's a bunch of books. Yeah, there's like books and some comics in there, but there's some stuff by like black authors and some stuff about the topic at hand that maybe perhaps people should, read. And, but
a shitload of games.
Yeah, and some good stuff too. Like, I mean, Baba Is You, which I actually just started playing, over the weekend, on the Switch. Because I bought it at the last sale, so now that there's another sale going on, I have to start playing the games from the last sale. it's just how it goes. Yeah, yeah, Baba's You is in there, Kerbal Space Program's in there, that's not nothing, Jackbox Party Pack 4.
Hyper Light Drifter. Observer.
Cool. Yeah, FTL, Armello. There's a lot of, like, quality things in there. Some Hockey Manager, Football Manager games, Company Heroes 2, both System Shocks.
Son of a bitch, I'm going to end up buying this, aren't I?
Probably. I mean, it's just like when the, Elite Dangerous is in there, and it's just
regular human basketball. That game is ridiculous.
Darkest Dungeon, the Shieldbreaker, which I'm guessing is like a standalone Darkest Dungeon thing. There's also some manga, some books, Black Women in Science,
The Darkest Dungeon is just DLC. They're not giving you the game. They're just giving you DLC. What the hell?
That's annoying because I don't have Darkest Dungeon and I wouldn't play it on PC at this point because I would play it on Switch or something. a lot of good eBooks in there. Regarding racial justice. So. It's a good opportunity to fill out your game catalog, fill out your library for some summer reading, educate yourself a bit more on the issues at hand, which I always recommend, by the way. When old number 45 was getting impeached, when that was, they were first holding the hearings last fall, I'm like, oh, I should, I wonder, what was Nixon almost impeached for? What about Watergate? Like, I think I know about it, but I went and bought the book about Watergate and read up on it, and I was like, holy shit! Man, this dude should get removed from office. Holy crap, there is no question yet. He still is here, but it's just like, yeah, it was wild, the parallels between the two instances in history. But yeah, reading, it's great. More bundles. Bundle yourself up.
Yeah, definitely. Especially, it's only $30. So yeah. if you don't have $30 to give to racial equality and justice and all that good stuff and get a shitload of games and books, I mean, what are you using that $30 for, really?
Yeah. Oh, I'm gonna
cocaine.
Don't call me out. Jesus Christ, Joe. I'll be checking that out. Faux show.
Awesome. Well, should we dive into reviews?
We should dive into review. Yes. All right.
Yes. You've got one game to talk about before the party cast gets going. We're going to kick things off with Samurai Showdown, developed and published by SNK, released June 11th on the Epic Games Store for $49.99. Samurai Showdown has enjoyed worldwide success as a blade-wielding fighting game since its first release in 1993. 11 years have passed since the last series installment, and now it's time for Samurai Showdown to return in a brand new game featuring high-end visuals and gameplay. Tim, tell us about Samurai Showdown.
Samurai Showdown! Hey! This is the game's debut on PC, a year after it came out on consoles, I believe. A little lagging behind there. It is exclusive to the Epic Store at this moment. Samurai Showdown. I enjoyed some Samurai Showdown in the 90s, but, it was always, the real versions of Samurai Showdown were always out of my reach, being that they lived on the Neo Geo, and the, like, Super Nintendo versions of Samurai Showdown 1 were compromised Well, and the Genesis version was like one didn't have Earthquake, one had Earthquake, but he was like really small. I actually had the Game Boy version of Samurai Showdown. You want to talk about compromised? Yeah, man.
I didn't even know they made a Game Boy version.
They made a Game Boy version of Samurai Showdown. Yeah, it's not great. But they put, you know, they put Street Fighter 2 on there. There's like a Killer Instinct for Game Boy. There's Mortal Kombat for Game Boy. They shoved anything on there. They made it work. At least with Samurai Showdown, like they, you know, they drew new little sprites and I don't know. It was decent for what it was. So yeah, most of my experience playing with Samurai Showdown characters is with like crossover games like SNK versus Capcom, and Capcom versus SNK and Neo Geo Battle Coliseum. Remember that game for the old PlayStation 2. But here, you know, fighting games are pretty the genre is healthy, I guess. We should say at this moment, and Samurai Showdown is back. So, PC debut. The game, the look of the game is basically like Street Fighter 4, except, you know, a bit better, but it is using like that kind of a cel shaded, there are 3D characters in 2D. They're not like the Arc System style of shading them to make them look 2D and then play magic tricks when the camera spins around. It's like, no, these are 3D character models fighting on a 2D plane. There is like ink looking splashes in the shadow, which is reminiscent of Street Fighter 4. This game is bloody. Well, if you leave the blood on, like you slash dudes with swords and you will get blood on yourself and blood on the other character. Like sometimes at the end of a round, you will just cut a dude in half, just Jesus. Straight up. Yeah. No, like I was playing it with my son and, that happened. And cause I didn't turn off the blood, whatever. that happened. And he was like, whoa. It didn't like gush, but it was still just like startling when Earthquake got cut in half. It was just like, oh my goodness. So the game looks good. It's a good look overall. I think the backgrounds don't look as good as the characters. Those didn't really pop for me, but it's not like a big deal. My graphics card now, like my original PC build was in 2012 and I upgraded my graphics card like a few years later, but still, nothing in this computer is newer than 5 years old other than like my hard drive. And it ran great. My computer is definitely starting to get a bit long in the tooth. It struggled to play, Call of Duty Modern Warfare when I downloaded that to play Warzone, but this ran just fine. No problem. Didn't need to tweak anything. Didn't need to fuss with anything. Just ran. Looked nice. Good. No problem. I like it. So the fighting in this game, in contrast to a lot of the other fighting games I reviewed for this show, which have been Arxis specifically, which are very fast anime fighters. This game is much, much more measured, in its game. Like it is not, you are not flying around the screen, like doing air combos. Like the air is a terrible place to be. All the characters have very floaty jumps. If you are jumping in, you are leaving yourself super exposed. It is very much a horizontal, like poke, sort of like that kind of a game. Like most of the mechanics, well, a lot of the mechanics they give you are strictly defensive. Like if you hit, I think it's light slash medium slash, your character will do a dodge, where they will just kind of like duck a little bit into the background so a blade can pass by them. There is a mechanic, a just defense, where if you hit block at like the, you know, right as the enemy is, an attack is going to hit you, you will block it perfectly and open them up for an attack. So it's kind of like there's that defensive dodge, there's that defensive almost like a parry mechanic, but when you parry them, like it opens them up to possibly disarm them and knock their weapon away. So the matches end up being like a lot of very careful and measured, like trying to poke your way in and set things up rather than just rushing in and comboing up. There's definitely a lot more. Not that any fighting game is lacking in strategery, but it is very cerebral and very timing-based in trying to figure out. It's just feels like a lot. It's more slow and defensive. Like, yeah, that then especially a lot of the faster, more combo based, not more combo based fighters that are out there right now, which is cool. It's a contrast. But if you're used to fast paced fighters, like, boy, is this gonna, you gotta slow down and really think with this one. The, base game comes with 16 characters. The code they sent us comes with both the, DLC packs, which is 4 characters a piece. The game on the Epic Store does not. Those you still have to pay for.
Yeah, I think the season passes are $20 each, so $5 a character.
$20 each, which is, you know, it's kind of a bummer a year after release and, like, trying to get the scene going on the PC that they didn't, like, at least include the first DLC pack just with the game. I think that would have been nice. I am not a man of business, but as a consumer, I think that would have been nice at this point, kind of a year into the game's life. Like, you know, there is still, like, another character coming I saw when I was looking it up, but just get those first 4 characters, just give those to people. You still got a DLC pack you can charge people for. You know, the character roster is a mix of new characters and old characters. I know a few of them are new. A few more of them are new to me just because I didn't play a lot of the later Samurai Showdowns, but there was definitely plenty of characters. I think most anyone you are looking for from the first 2 games is there with their moves intact. The meter is the same. Well, it's the same looking meter. It's the same rage meter that gradually fills up through the round. And once you get to the top, your moves do more damage. You have the ability of doing a super move, which will disarm your opponent. You can also use it. Oh, I don't remember what the mode is called. You can activate some mode. You can activate something where the background changes and it gives you, you know, more power and speed in your attacks, but also lets you do this instant, dashing slash strike, like that whole anime dash past the guy and slash with your sword, and then you wait 2 seconds and then they're hit by it. And the more meter you have when you do it, the more damage it does. So it might do 3/4 of a dude's health if it's full, but you only get to do those once per match. That is very limited. Once you do that, it goes away. That bar is gone. So you got to be careful about when you use it. For being a game that relies, I think, heavily on counterplay and defense, there was not a ton of training options, especially compared to, gosh, the last fighting game I reviewed was Undernight, which had a very expansive training and tutorial and combo drills to do. This just will basically run you through the basic stuff and then they're like, okay, off you go. There was not combo lists to a challenge mode to go through with character combos. There wasn't a thing to teach you advanced techniques. You can set that stuff up in training just to guard, you can program the AI to do certain things like you can in any fighting game, but I was a little bummed it didn't have more. Maybe I've just been spoiled by all the Arxis fighters I've been getting into, but it felt a little bare in that spot. And also a bit as far as modes, there isn't an arcade mode. There's a story mode, which kind of fills that role, in that you go in there and you fight through 8 or so fighters to get to the end, and there's story beats in between, but there isn't a straightforward just give me fight, done. No. There is a, there's local versus, there's a survival mode, there is a gauntlet where you have to do win a 1-round fight against every character in the game, which is fun, a fun challenge, but there's not a really expansive, meaty kind of campaign or story or other stuff to muck around with. There is this asynchronous online mode where you will basically train up a ghost of your fighter, and it will fight against other people online, either other players or their ghosts or whatever. So, the more you play, the more that thing will mimic the AI will mimic the way that you fight to fight against other players, which is kind of a neat idea, but you got to play for a while before that really becomes a thing. And other than being like a kind of a, I don't know, like it's interesting, but it's not like a mind blowing addition that I was sitting there like, I want to spend a lot of time with this. No, like most of what I think, you know, a person getting a fighting game is going to want to do is play a game online against people. And that might be a problem. I was having some real trouble getting matches this past weekend. This past weekend being the weekend the game came out. Like I was just sitting there and trying, you know, they have a few different parameters for finding a match, which you can base it on like how close you want the person to be to your rank, like your region and their ping, of course. And, you know, I first started off with the settings at the way I wanted them, which is like, you know, new players in my region with a good ping. Yeah. And it was just sitting there spinning, and I'm, you know, downloading stuff from itch.io, and I'm just kind of like, okay, all right. And, you know, I tweak it a little more, and eventually I switched it to all, just top to bottom all, and I did get a match, and it sucked. Not just because I got my ass kicked, but it was just very stuttery. I remember hearing that the game did not have a spectacular net code last year, and it worries me. One, that the only match I could get was bad, and that I could get so few matches, like, on the weekend the game was released, too.
Yeah.
And I had to lower those parameters, lower them so much just to get it. Like, that makes me worry about, like, the longevity of the game on PC, and, you know, the Epic Store does not have the install base that Steam has, even though it's, you know, come a long way in the last year and a half. And some people, you know, turn their nose up at it because it's Epic and how they've signed exclusives and whatever, blah, 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 blah. But no need to get in the weeds on that. That's where the game is. And yeah, it's, yeah, that's the big concern. It can be a great fighting game, but if you don't have people to play with, then it kind of doesn't matter. No. You know?
Well, as it stands, $50 on this one. What do you think?
I think it's going to have to be a try. The game is rock solid. It is a no doubt a great fighting game. But if, you know, with the lack of kind of single player local modes and with how not great that online multiplayer experience was the very first weekend, and maybe, you know, maybe it'll get patched to help out with the net code. Maybe once a few more people buy it and get into the game, it'll be easier to get into matches. But at this moment, it might be a little bit more of a wait and see or a try, as it were, before you just absolutely go hard into it.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Tim, thanks as always for being here. We are going to switch over to party cast mode. Do you have any final words?
No, I don't. Sorry. Try not to let Purnell talk too much.
How?
Can't stop the signal now. Oh, geez. Why is there gunk in my cup? I don't like it. Man.
All right, moving on. We've got the party cast crew going on now. Cole's here, Purnell's here, Chris is here. How's everybody doing?
Trying to believe.
Trying to believe. Yay for references that no one else gets.
Oh, they should, because if they don't, they missed out.
Remember when we had a Patreon and you could see that shit?
Remember when we had listeners?
Memories.
Or
my style is rich, dope, fat, and witch.
Day that looks rich.
There you go.
M-I-X the crack in the bowl.
Yo, I'm Joe, and I'm here to say I like podcasting in a major way.
Oh, no. The funny part is, you ever think about that? Like, a lot of times when people do the whole, I don't know how to rap, so here's a rap, they use that flow.
Yes.
And yet, I think we all got that flow from the same cereal commercial.
What cereal commercial is that?
See, now I'm trying to remember, but no, it was a cereal commercial where the guy said that. It might have been like the Fruity Pebbles.
See, it's one of those cultural phenomenons where I know it because people have made fun of it. I do not know the source at all.
Me neither.
Like, I'm almost positive it was a Fruity Pebbles commercial. And Barney was trying to be a rapper, so he gift Red's pebbles because that makes sense. God, none of that shit made sense.
Nope.
I'm going to get Fred's Fruity Pebbles. Why don't you just ask him for a bowl? He's got a whole fucking box. He's not that hungry. He didn't even give any of the pebbles. I think he could share some with Barney, but...
I'm hungry.
I remember that, too, quite a bit.
Everybody remembers that. That.
Nice old commercial. Oh, Merry Christmas, Fred.
I refuse to engage in this conversation because everybody thinks I'm old anyway, and I don't want to, like, cement it.
What are you going to start talking about?
All old. What are you talking about?
No. Look here. I'm younger than Joe, so I need to, like, hold on to that.
I'm just thinking it's funny. You're like, I don't want to join a conversation about nostalgic cereal because I don't want people to think I'm old. What cereal are you going to name that's going to label you old? What's older than King Vitamin at this point, which is what I threw out there? What's older than King Vitamin? Like,
Quisp.
I think Quisp and King Vitamin were around the same time, though.
I don't know.
You can still get King Vitamin.
What cereal do I remember? It's old.
You know that, right? That you can still get King Vitamin?
Can you?
They still make it, yes.
I'll be damned.
Yeah. It's still out there.
Yeah.
They took
a WIC-approved food.
They took off the photograph of the old man because I think that old man ended up being like arrested for something or whatever. There was like some scandal around the old King Vitamin, and so they replaced him with a cartoon version. I mean, they were gonna anyway because we don't, you know, we need wacky cartoon mascots on cereal at all times. Otherwise, how are kids gonna wake up?
Yeah, random old man just doesn't make sense.
You remember when here's how old I am. Do you remember when there was three chefs for Cinnamon Toast Crunch?
Yes.
And each of them sang a line?
Yes.
Wait, I don't remember that. What, the McGuppo?
Wendell was the white-haired one, but there was a brown-haired one that was taller and skinnier, and a black-haired one that was like a little shorter and fatter, and they were both younger than Wendell, but then it just became Wendell. His name's Wendell, by the way.
Yeah.
And
that I do remember.
He reps the cereal to this day.
Yeah, the other two were left in the dust.
Yeah, gone the way of Snack and Crackle. Snap and Crackle.
No, but they're still around. All three of them are still kicking it. Every box still has all three of them. None of them were laid off. You know, they're all 100% in the business.
Crackle got furloughed.
Because Snap of COVID. And
Popper, all that's left. they're all that's left.
Furloughed because of COVID.
Like, you know what? Screw this. I'll make my own cereal. It's going to be called Corn Krispies. It'll be delicious. No one needs Rice Krispies anymore. That's for chumps.
They're with the Cookie Crisp burglar, too.
Yeah, exactly. Cookie Crook.
That's a removal that genuinely makes no sense to me, to be perfectly honest with you. Chip the Dog without Cookie Crook is just pointless to me. It's always been pointless to me. They were a pair. And then you had Cookie Cop, which gave them a purpose. Cookie Cop existed to chase after Cookie Crook and Cookie Dog, or Criminal Dog, whatever the hell his name was. Chip the Dog, there we go. And
Hashtag defund the Cookie Cop.
I was about to say all Cookie Cops are bad.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh my God.
A-C-A-B.
All Cookie Cops are bad. Oh my God.
Jesus Christ.
You can't fault Cookie Cop. He was doing this. He was doing a thing. Like,
he's an immigrant.
He was an immigrant and he was legit about his job. Like, he didn't screw it up. He didn't screw around. He got down to business. He showed up. Cookie Crook was in that cereal box. Get your hands out of that damn box. And he's like, whoa. No, I didn't. He runs away, chases him, hits him with the baton. It's done. You know? It's a clean prize, a clean job. Everyone's happy. Hell, even Cookie Cooks are a little happy because he's a little bit of a sadist. He's okay with it. You know? It just worked. Everything flowed there.
What the fuck conversation are we having?
I just outside the realm of norm really quickly.
Tim's on earlier and things are like fairly serious talking with Tim about, you know, COVID and the world and returning to work and how scary things are. And then you come over to us during the party cast and it's fucking Cookie Crisp. And
it's a party cast.
I mean, well, you want to take is okay. So we do know that, you know, Captain Crunch did have a bit of a spill with COVID, and he had to go on furlough for a little while, just kind of recover. He did beat it though. He was okay.
He's having a bit of a weird transition
coming back, you know, because he lost some weight in the process. He's a little groggy than he used to be, and they expect him to still pilot his ship throughout the cookie seas.
He's still expected to crunchitize those kids.
Yes. I don't think he's really up to the task, and he doesn't think he's up to the task. It is clearly shown in his work. He put one kid in the hospital through a poor crunchitization. I don't know how to make that any better
for him. He made a cereal that was all berries, and then just called it Oops All Berries instead of owning up to the mistake.
But that was one of the best mistakes he could have possibly made.
Talk about accountability, goddammit.
That's very true, yeah. That's failing upwards. That's some white privilege right there.
he just screws up the formula. He's like, whoops, well, we'll just package it and sell it.
Suck it, bitches. You're going to eat it anyways, whether you like it or not.
That's the original proposed title.
Admiral Crunch accidentally throws together a freaking box of Oops All Crunch, and then that didn't go too well. But, what is he going to do?
Oops All Crunch is literally just called Captain Crunch.
Yeah, no one buys that shit because Oops All Crunch kind of sucks.
I like it.
I do too, except there's better. It's like
Oops No Berries.
Oops No Berries. The day I learned that Crunch Berries cereal was a thing, I never wanted Captain Crunch again. When I learned Peanut Butter Crunch was a thing, I almost didn't want Crunch Berries again. Except I do like them both. But that's the thing. Captain Crunch is good, but it will never be as good as any other Captain Crunch because they changed it up. They threw more in there. They tweaked it a bit. And then you got Christmas Crunch. Fucking forget it. You remember when they had the frosting in there?
No.
See, there's a grandpa moment for you. When I was a young Christmas Crunch was festive.
When I was your age, my cook, my Captain Crunch had berries, and real berries and twigs.
Didn't they do this thing for a couple of Christmases where they just made them red and green berries?
Yeah, and I'm probably. The thing about it is, it was nifty, but when Christmas Crunch, the real, not this fake shit they put out now, when the real Christmas Crunch was a thing, it was fantastic because it mattered. Like, I hate when products decide to make holiday products where the only thing that they do is they change the color of the cream or the cereal bits or whatever. And then on the bottom of the box, it says vanilla flavored colored candies and meal, like colored crisp and milk. Like, no one cares about vanilla cereal. Give me flavor. If you're going to change the color, give it a flavor. And what did Christmas Crunch do? It had frosting, sprinkly frosting. Frosting does not make sense in milk, and yet somehow it worked for Christmas Crunch.
And the bottom of the box had Bible verses.
Jesus.
The true meaning of Christmas. God bless us, everyone. Line it out.
God crunch us, everyone.
Mm-hmm. Wow. God crunchitize us, everyone.
Giggle.
Wow. The blasphemy going on tonight.
Someone might blaspheme. There's a new show title. Someone always bless you. Welcome to the SAB podcast.
Captain Blasphemy.
Someone always blasphemes podcast.
Blasphemize me.
There's your show title. Blasphemize me, Captain.
Blasphemize me, Captain.
Oh my God. I'm writing that the fuck down. I don't even know how you spell that.
You'll laugh your way to the dictionary. It'll be perfect. You got this.
Whatever. Close enough. If I misspelled, I don't even care at this point. Shit. We have reviews. Should we move on to those? We have shit to do.
No, we're doing fine.
I wish we were doing cereals right now.
I wanted this to be like a shorter episode because I feel like garbage, and now it's just like 15 minutes of cereal talk.
And now you feel great because you're talking about crazy cereals. And we could always review Sour Patch Kids cereal.
No.
I've actually, my sister went to the store and she saw Twinkie cereal and vanilla wafers banana pudding cereal.
Wow.
This is shit that I don't buy. But my sister.
Do you remember back when we were kids and the sugary cereals were actually kind of rare? Like,
yeah.
Were barely sweetened. Frosted Flakes was probably the closest thing you got next to like Lucky Charms. And getting sweet cereals was like a treat. Now you go to the grocery store, you got to fight to find healthy shit.
Yeah.
It's in its own little quarantine section at the end of the aisle.
Even the healthy shit gave up. Like Special K's, like, here's chocolate chunks. Just fucking have at it.
Special K, like, here's some actual Special K in the box. Holy stop.
Oh, I think they're bringing back Pop-Tart cereal as well.
Oh, no.
Oh, no, that cereal's the shit. Have you ever had it?
I haven't had the new version. But the first wave in the early 90s, yeah, I was all over that.
I had it recently because I didn't even remember it, but I was at the grocery store one day, and they were on clearance. So I bought one box of the Frosted Strawberry to see what it was like. I ate that shit like potato chips. Went back and bought like five more boxes.
Damn.
It's stupid good.
I remember it being like the best in the world.
It, as far as fruit, like sugary cereals go, oh, it's up there. Like, I'm at that point now. Like I said, I'm eating them like potato chips. I don't even want the milk. That's just extra fat. I don't want that. Give me the cereal. I want to eat that shit. Snack.
Gimme.
There's something odd about that in and of itself. The fact that you can, in fact, buy cereal that eats like a potato, like a snacky potato chip. It's clearly not even about the health anymore. It's just some sugary shit. And then they have the audacity to put on the box. It's got grains in it.
It's fortified with one Centrum per box, and that's about it.
A whole Centrum?
Yeah. And it's one single Centrum.
It's grounded up and distributed between like 500 balls.
Exactly. Balls. So yeah, that's all it is. It's just a snack food with a Centrum crushed over it. So have at it.
Poor Joe.
Gee, Joe, why doesn't your show have listeners?
people are. Hey,
it's only climbed since I got here. It went from 3 to 4 on my watch.
Honestly, sometimes it's all about the gabber too. Like,
we're moving just up like, in the world.
Here's the wacky chatter, and then here's the review section. Bam. Because I'm telling you, the wacky chatter works. It works.
Yeah, we need the wackiness.
It displays all of our unique personalities. It sets us apart from just, here's some guy saying, I'm here to talk about Candy on Ice, the game. It's about candy.
On ice.
Over ice rink, and you have to go pick it up. Hey. That would be a terrible idea for a game.
I refuse to believe we're that much different than any other gaming podcast.
I don't know.
I don't listen to them, but I'm pretty sure it has to
be. Do you think other video game podcasts talk about breakfast cereals and Centrum?
They sure as hell do. I checked.
It's such a universal topic.
But they don't talk about it because they're trying to be professional. Ain't nobody got time for that. We're going to talk about cereal and shit. And
that's what happens when you throw money into the mix.
That
would be a nasty cereal, actually. I'm okay with the actual...
please throw money into the mix.
Yeah, but that would be gross. I don't want to eat money cereal.
Money cereal.
Wonder if there was a money...
All pennies.
All pennies. Get your dentist on the horn now.
Crunch.
From General Mills and Chase Bank.
Every box might contain a dollar, a silver dollar.
I you can't tell if that's copper or blood I'm tasting.
A little bit of column A, a little column B.
A lot of column B.
It's a whole damn pillar.
Oh, Jesus. So, yeah, we got reviews we got to take care of. Are you guys ready to dive into these?
Nope.
I guess so.
Oh, I don't have any design.
No, I got to talk more about these cereal things.
No, you have other stuff to talk about. We got some good games to talk about. We're going to start off, Purnell. You're going to talk about East Memories of Salsetta, developed by Nihon Falcom, published by XSEED and Marvelous USA, released June 9th on the PS4 for $29.99 digital or $39.99 physical or digital deluxe. World-famous red-haired adventurer Adol Christian awakens in the unfamiliar land of Salsetta, remembering nothing more than his name. Join Adol and his new friends as he embarks on an adventure to map the wilderness and reclaim his memories in this beloved action RPG from Nihon Falcom. Purnell, tell us about it.
Well, this is an interesting one because for those who don't know, this is actually a port of the originally PlayStation Vita exclusive of the same title. No changes per se, just, you know, now it's on your TV, on your PlayStation 4. So I personally have played the living daylights out of it on that system and figured, for the purposes of review, I'm going to do something funny, and I'm going to play on nightmare mode because that's become the running joke in my life, too. Play everything on nightmare mode.
Oh, boy.
And while I didn't get but so far, because fuck that, I was able to at least get an understanding of the check, how it looks on the system proper, so I can at least, you know, vouch for that. But as far as the game itself, this game involves, this is actually the second adventure in Adol Christian's life, which is funny. I only learned that in the last like week or so, believe it or not, of like, because basically the entire concept of the Ease franchise is just, it's the chronicalization of Adol Christian's adventures across his entire life. And the Memories of Celceta is a remake of the fourth game, which in turn is the third remake of said fourth game, or third version of said fourth game. And it is actually his second adventure in his lifetime, which is kind of cool. But so the idea it's the behind
the third version of the fourth game, which is the second adventure.
Yes.
It's
ridiculous.
Nailed it.
It's so ridiculous, but I love it. But the idea behind this game is that, like you said earlier, he shows up into a mining town one day. He has no memory of how he got there. And he immediately, in earnest, begins an adventure by being met by a guy who claims to know him. And then they together go into a mine to save a bunch of miners. And then at that point, they then go on turn to adventure into the Forts of Celceta. And the entire game is pretty much, there's some story bits here and there as you walk around to regain his memories. But for the most part, the game is literally exploring this force. So how does the exploration typically work? Well, the game involves a three-man party system, usually Adol and two friends, but eventually you'll end up with enough people that Adol can even get swapped out. Each party member has one of three attack types, strike, slash, and pierce. And the purpose of those attack types is that some enemies are weak to specific attack types. So you'll want to switch to the right person for the job to pummel them daylights out of an enemy, do more damage to them, and potentially, you know, knock them off guard and eventually kill them. There are a few combat mechanics that come into play for this game, too, that work for an interesting, fun gameplay system. One being just the typical idea of like special attacks. As you level up your characters, you will get new attack moves that you can assign to one of the four face buttons. And then you can hold down the right trigger and then press the face button corresponding to the attack, and you perform it. Each attack uses up an SP gauge you build by beating the snot out of monsters. And depending on if you manage to kill an enemy, well, let me rephrase that. You use the attacks to fight monsters. But if you can kill an enemy with a special attack, you'll get a skill finish, which will in turn give you half of the cost of the special attack back. Also, the more enemies you defeat with special attacks, the more you boost in super gauge. Or I mean, what the heck the actual technical term? Oh, XP, EX gauge. There we go. And when you max that out, you can do a super move for each character, which does a lot of damage and usually is good for clearing a room of monsters or enemies. So in addition to that, as you're wandering around the map, every character you get gets one sort of map unique action. Nothing particularly special, but just enough to be good. Like, for example, Adol, he's the only one that can actually pick up his memories because they're actually physically manifested on the ground, and he walks past like, oh, there's my memory, and he goes up and he touches it. He gets a flashback, and he gets a stat boost from the flashback. One of his friends is able to unlock treasure chests. Another one is able to like hit switches with a spear and so on and so forth. And then lastly, there's also a matter of equipment. So you get normal equipment like you always do in these games, sword, armor, and two accessories. But you also occasionally get sort of artifacts, which show up in treasure chests, typically in dungeon areas. And when you get them, they offer you certain perks. Sometimes it's simple stuff like swimming underwater. Other times it might be increased XP gauge increases. But then there's my favorite item that you get in the game, which is the Gale Boot. And the sole purpose of those is they make you run very fast. And I mean, they really make you run very fast. Early on in the game, before you get those, you're exploring this giant force and you're trying to run and roll and dodge. And by saying you're dodging, you're doing so because you're trying to just move faster than your normal run will take you. And you're constantly rolling just to get faster. Or that might just be me because I have attention issues, but whatever. But once you get those boots, all of a sudden world traversal becomes a joke in a good way, because now you're just like blasting across the terrain, getting where you need to be when you need to get there. So in addition to just like moving around the map, you can get around pretty quickly also by way of warping, because early on in the game, you get an accessory item where you don't even have to equip it. You just get the item. And then once you do, you're able to warp freely between totem points that you can find throughout the world, as long as you find them. So if you find one and then you walk up to it, you can then warp to any of the other ones you've found in the past, which makes it much easier to get around this large, and I mean really large force that you end up exploring throughout the game. Two more combat mechanics I forgot to mention. Flash guard and flash dodge. So enemies, when they attack you, they have pretty see invisible patterns. You can watch for them and either, you know, take the hit, dodge them, or block them. Blocking using the triangle button or dodge using the X button. If you manage to dodge the attack right as it's about to hit you, you'll get a flash move. Flash move makes you move fast while everybody else slows down. Makes it possible for you to get a few cheap hits in while everyone can while enemies can't keep up with your movements. Flash guard is much better, but also much tougher to pull off, because you have to actually stop to take the hit and guard just in the nick of time. And if you pull that one off, you don't freeze time or anything, but you take zero damage. You start doing critical hit damage for a short period of time, and you actually get a quicker boost of your EX gauge. And on nightmare mode, you almost have to do that. So the first boss that I had to fight in the game on this difficulty, because again, the last time I played was on hard mode, I pretty much fought him for 10 minutes. And in those 10 minutes, I had to perfectly guard every attack he did. Wow. And every time I screwed up, it was like, time to do it over again. And I'm sure it'll get easier as I get more moves. As I get more moves and I get more healing items and stuff like that. But that early point in the game, you only have two potions and one resurrection item, so you don't get any room for error, because two hits and you're dead. But that's why it's called nightmare mode. But the game itself is just a wonderful, wonderful experience. The earlier parts of the game, just like before, didn't grip me too much from a narrative perspective, but the latter half of the game, narrative-wise, becomes a lot cooler. But even when the narrative isn't quite gripping me, I really enjoy the aspect of it feeling more like a age-old Christian adventure. It's not narrative-driven. It's exploration-driven. You're going into a forest that, in this game world anyway, no one's ever seen the end of before. No one's charted it, which is funny because at the beginning of the game, Adol supposedly went through it and then came back with no memory. So it's like, clearly he could have charged it, but whatever. Now you're going back in there to a place where no one's ever been, supposedly, and you're charting it for the world to find out. So you're running around discovering things that the game world doesn't know of yet, and it's kind of cool when you kind of come across the things you do see. I guess one last thing I should mention, which is a gameplay mechanic, but I barely ever use it, which is why I never tend to talk about it, is earlier I mentioned attack and like basically equipment on weapons and armor. As you walk around the game world and you kill enemies or get or find like deposits, you can smash them up, enemies or deposits, and get drops, like sort of like minerals or materials. So you might get plants or ore or steel or hide or guts or whatever the game wants to give you. And you take those items and you take them back to town to a smithy who can use those items to sort of enhance the weapons or armor you've currently got to boost certain elements or certain traits to them, such as more damage dealt or, you know, provide more damage in regards to specific attack elements like fire or poison or resistance to those same elements, health regen, and things of that nature. It's just an added thing you can do if you want to use a specific piece of equipment longer than you normally would before buying something new. You can say, well, rather than buy a new piece of equipment, I can enhance my old stuff to give it these perks. So it's just something that's extra there for you to do if you want to do that as well. But all in all, it's interesting to play this because they didn't change anything per se about the game from the Vita version. It's still the same game to the letter. But it looks really nice on a television set. It's a beautiful game. When the game originally came out on the Vita, people were very much complaining about the fact that it didn't release on a home console instead of on the Vita. And now that we've got it on a console, it still plays well. It's a lovely title, and it says something that it still plays well, because since then we've also gotten Ease 8 Lacrimosa of Dana, which in a way kind of improved on a lot of the stuff that this game does, but this game is still a ridiculous amount of fun to play. It didn't lose its luster at all. And one thing that I did notice that kind of changed, though, it's just more of a cosmetic thing, is that the right thumbstick in the game, when you push it left and right, it zooms the camera in and out. So you can zoom in like close to Adol and his friends and kind of get like a nice up close and personal view of the game, or you can pull it back and get a more distant view of the game map. I'm not quite sure if it's like if they did it because they just because they could with this one, or if it was maybe even something that was on the Vita that I just never noticed, but it's definitely in this game. I noticed it this time and I'm pointing it out. But ultimately, I feel as though this game is still an awesome experience. Great to play, and if you didn't play it on the Vita, which a lot of people didn't because again it was on the Vita, yeah. This is a worthy purchase and something that you will definitely enjoy playing through. It's another Adol Christian adventure, another fantastic run of Falcom Sound Team music, and God, is this OST a superb mix. You can't go wrong. It's just a lot of fun, fast paced, frantic, enjoyable.
Yeah, I enjoyed this one on Vita. I think you just sold me on picking it up on PS4 because I've been looking for an excuse to get back into this.
Yes, especially if you never finished it. Go back and finish it.
Yeah, I'm going to have to. Son of a bitch.
Like, think of it this way. If Purnell beats a game, it's probably worth playing through because I never finish games.
You know what game you should finish?
Trials of Cold Steel 2. Trails of Cold Steel 2. It's a great game, by the way. Darn thing. I will say one thing about that game, though, is that, and it's almost not even really cheating because they're both Falcom games, so I'm basically just selling the whole company at this point. But that Trails of Cold Steel 1 made me realize that I am still 100% capable of staying up past 1 a.m. if I'm engaged enough, because that game kept me up till 6 in the morning when I should have been in bed, and in any other normal circumstance, I would have passed out on the couch. But nope. I was in it, baby. So Ease might do it for you, too.
Sounds good.
I hope so, because you got to play. I hope
so, too. All right. Next game to talk about is called Summer in Mara, developed and published by Chibig, released June 16th on Switch and Steam for $24.99. Koa has an entire island to care for and a whole ocean to explore in the farming adventure Summer in Mara. A colorful and strong narrative propels the adventure as players explore a tropical archipelago with farming, crafting, and exploration mechanics all weaved into Koa's journey. Chris, tell us about this one.
Okay, so, Summer's in Mara, Summer Mara.
I don't know.
Is it? I don't know. I messed up because Mara is a god in Skyrim, so that's how I immediately thought to pronounce it.
Well, then maybe it is Mara.
Yeah, maybe. Okay, we'll never know. This, exactly. We'll never know because there's barely any voice acting in the game. It's one of those where, like, you know, somebody will do a vocalization when they start a line, like, or something like that.
And that's it.
Yeah, and that's it. Which would be really convenient if we could all do that. But anyways.
You know what's really convenient? The fact that Root Beer's My Jam just dropped 150 biddies. 50, 50, and 50. George, we're going to have to get you to take away. So, come on, sound file. Just fucking...
dropping bits! All over your fucking face! Wet pancakes!
The bits just keep coming, too. Like, oh, it's 50 and then 50 and then 50 and then 50. Cole, you're getting involved dropping 10 and 10. Are you... Oh, my Lord. Oh, my Lord. It's not stopping. Oh, my God. My screen. Wow. All those bits on the screen.
Yay.
That is ridiculous. So yeah, Summer and Mara.
Yeah. So this is the story all about a little girl who it's kind of like told wordlessly in the beginning as a vignette. She's the sole survivor of a shipwreck, whereupon a I don't really know how to describe these creatures. They're like pastel colored, kind of alien looking, kind of animal looking, depending on which one. Anyways, they're critters. And she is rescued by one such who raises her on, her little island in a series of islands and basically kind of, you know, teaches her how to farm and how to do chores and all this other stuff. And basically the main thrust of the game is like, if you take something away from nature, you must like replace it with something else kind of stuff. So, you learn how to chop down trees, but you also learn how to plant trees. You learn how to harvest, but also to replant stuff. And, you know, you learn how to cook dishes and all that other stuff. And, so basically you get to play through the game, as this little girl. The lady eventually goes away, but the game didn't really, either I was asleep or something, the game didn't really explain why she went away. It's not like a tragic thing or anything. There's nothing, I mean, I played a fair bit into this game and there's still nothing like quite tragic about any of it. It's pretty lighthearted. Anyways, so you basically get to wake up every day and there's a timer and you get to do basically whatever you want. But of course, if you're productive, then that's going to help you along. You have a hunger counter as well as a wakedness counter. And, you know, if you want to, you know, you got to stay full and you got to stay energetic. Otherwise, you're just going to pass out after a few minutes. Although the game's pretty good about letting you get by with just the bare minimum of everything. but yeah, like, you know, you want to plant, or you want to like kick trees and kick oranges out of them and then make orange juice out of that. And that's usually enough to get you going for the day. But yeah, you basically run around your little island and, you know, basically start the cycle of like, you know, picking fruit when it's grown and then turning it into food and then, you know, planting stuff. And, basically, anytime that you start getting into this cycle, and then when you talk to the right person, then eventually you get some kind of task where you have to craft something or find something or talk to someone. And, you know, you have basically all the time in the world to do anything in this game. And so you could spend like 5 days doing chores and then talk to somebody and have to like, you know, you had to build something so that requires a whole lot of wood. So you spend like days planting trees, you know, and chopping down trees and, you know, doing all that stuff while you're just kind of weaving that into your Harvest Moon-esque day. And eventually it amounts to things like being able to leave your island on a boat and coming to another island that's actually a city and getting into the city, talking to the right people, setting up trade, selling them like either materials or things that you've made for, you know, for money, and then spending that money on anything from more materials to different types of, you know, different types of materials to just, you know, gacha machines like they have in Japan, basically the, like the claw game kind of deal.
Yeah.
And, you know, fun stuff like that. And the whole time, yeah, every time something new happens, it kind of, you learn a little bit more about the world around you and eventually, you know, get to know the overarching plot, and it's just kind of unfolded for you bit by bit. So, yeah, the presentation of it is very, it looks a lot like Wind Waker, actually, the Zelda game.
I love that one.
And, yeah, everybody's got a, you know, cel-shaded look, you know, not a whole lot of detail, but just enough to get it by, you know, they look like really nice cartoons. Action's pretty fast, although it does tend to chug once you get to the city because there's just too many graphics on the screen and this isn't a AAA game, which, you know, even a AAA game would do that. And, like, it especially, like, you get the link between this and Link, between this and Wind Waker when you first use your boat and you actually have to propel the boat to the next island, like over the waves and stuff. So yeah, this is a really cool little game. It kind of combines the relaxing sort of Animal Crossing / Harvest Moon-esque, like, you know, putting the work in, only somehow it's fun because it's a video game. And
this sounds like something Cole is just like sad that she didn't get to cover.
Oh,
I kind of am. I was like,
Why isn't this on Xbox?
Right. Yeah. Well, get it on Xbox, people.
Damn.
Anyway,
Chibig.
And yeah, you actually make friends and like end up with like all these other people kind of surrounding you. You can befriend crabs that are on your island by feeding them and like petting them. And yeah, there's just all kinds of adorable things to do in the game, as well as, like I said, a story that actually is, you know, more than you would normally find in a day-to-day life kind of sim. So the only thing, you know, there's a couple of little weaknesses here and there about this game. One is that there's no compass when you're running around. You get to look at a map that's static, but you yourself are running around in 3D space, and you kind of are like, well, okay, I can see that the lake's to my left, so that means this way must be north. You know, like, you have to, like, do it that way. Like, you can't just... and there's no markers that lead you to where you need to go. And sometimes you need to find a person. And like I said, you've got a timer. So when it gets too late, you end up, if you're not, if you don't find some place to sleep, you end up relocating to a place, where you're then forced to sleep until the next day, which, by the way, the days are not counted in this game. It's just an endless cycle of days that has no number.
Hmm.
So that's an interesting thing too, that they didn't really, you know, there's no time. Yeah, there's no pressure to do anything, because, like, I think it's just an endless summer, at least as far as I can tell. Like, I've definitely been around for hundreds of days and not seen the weather change, except to rain every now and then. Which, by the way, the rain actually plays into your gameplay, just like in Harvest Moon, which is nice. So, yeah, it's one of those things where it is a little hard to navigate, but once you kind of get into the rhythm of, like, knowing that each task could take you like a week to complete, then it, you know, and there's literally no pressure, then you're actually kind of, you know, it's a little easier to like kind of get into the running around and getting to know all the landmarks and, you know, things like that in the system. So maybe that's by design, but I will say it was annoying to begin with. The other thing is weird is that it has a soundtrack that just kind of shows up every now and then and then stops completely. Yeah, the music will just start and then play for a little while and then stop. And then it just, you know, another song will come up about a minute later. And it doesn't, it's one of those weird things where it's a game without a persistent soundtrack, which is interesting to me. But other than that, yeah, I found this game very charming and very likable. And I like playing as a, you know, a little girl that can, if you get a running start, can jump over an entire tree. Because for some reason they gave this girl like mega legs or something.
Okay, so $25. What do you think?
$25. Yeah, I think this one's worth it. It shows its indiness a little bit with, like I said, some graphical and limitations, and just like seems like some mechanical limitations. But you're not going to notice it, any of that while you're playing, because it's very engaging, and I think it's a very good game for people who like to, you know, do things and get a story, but they don't want to fight, because there's no violence in this game. So, you know, it's definitely a great way to, like, it's a nice, peaceful game that actually has a point, and I really enjoy that about it. So I say, yeah, buy it.
Nice. All right. Next game is called Out Buddies DX, developed by Julian Laufer, published by Head Up Games, released June 5th on Xbox One and Switch for $17.99. Run, gun, and explore an open undercity in this otherworldly, nonlinear Metroidvania adventure about the old gods, strange creatures, and the remnants of a lost world. Purnell, tell us about Out Buddies DX.
Out Buddies DX is what happens when someone has fond memories of Metroid 1 and decides, I want to make a game that plays more like that and less like present-day Metroid games, because this game feels like I'm playing Metroid 1. What do I mean by that? Well, I'm not sure. Well, the first question to ask is, how many of you guys in here actually played Metroid 1 when it first came out?
Yes.
I did.
Okay, so do you guys remember how when you would play that game, Samus pretty much touched down on the planet, and that was it. If you didn't have the manual, you didn't even know what the hell you were trying to do. All you knew was you had a place to explore, and you wanted to explore it. And whatever you found was cool, and if you found a boss, that was also cool. But ultimately, you were just trying to get things done. That is what this game is pretty much to me. there is a narrative, not a narrative, but there's like a thing that is set up at the early part of the game where the main character crashes in the underwater city and he meets a little electronic buddy person, robot thing rather, and it follows him around. And at one point you come across a subterranean city that has these little like Grimlock people running around in it. And you ultimately you find yourself hoping to find like missing members of that clan hidden throughout the underground city or underwater complex. But that's about it. Aside from that, you are exploring a variety of different environments, and every once in a while, coming across a ridiculously large boss that you have to take down with your armaments. What armaments? Well, you start with a pea shooter. Well, who else do you want? You don't even start with that. You start with nothing. All you can do is jump, and you have a steamroll, which is something that you can do by hitting the right trigger button, and you'll kind of roll across the ground using up your steam gauge. And you can use that to get into low areas, like for crawling, or to evade past enemies that are actually on the screen attacking you. As you wander around this complex, you'll come across new equipment, such as guns that can be used for opening different doors, a la Metroid, or just for more firepower options when you're fighting enemies. And each of those guns has some variant of an upgrade that can also be found in the environments, whether it be a mod for the gun, like a charge shot, or additional shots for missiles, so on and so forth. And then there's also suit enhancements. So the suit enhancements are basically things that will allow you to have more mobility as you explore the subterranean, or this, I guess it's still technically subterranean, though it's underwater also. So this subterranean cavern. Much of the joy stems from just walking around, looking for secrets. And cool enough, the little robot buddy of yours isn't just there for show. He has a little sub-component or sub-ability that allows him to scan areas for, you know, for breakable surfaces, which can be bombed. Or he also has another weird thing he does, which is essentially hacking. That's what the game refers to it as. You can actually fire projectiles at certain enemies, and if the enemy is susceptible to it, the projectile will glitch them out a la Axiom Verge, and they might do something different. Like they might become a steppable block. They might just straight up blow up. They might become a block you can stand on that floats in the air. And some other different functions that you'll come across too as you enhance his hack ability by finding, you know, collectibles also hidden throughout the dungeon or the world or whatever. And he can also do another strange thing, which is he can pick up objects and telepathically carry them to different areas. Not every object, but just specific special blocks and things like that. You might see a square or a rectangle or a square box. You pick it up, move it, and put it against a wall so that your main character can kind of jump off of it and then wall jump back and forth up to a ledge above him and get around. All in all, the game itself is massive. You're going to spend a fair bit of time in it just exploring the map and looking for the little critter people from the colony I was telling you about, which there's a total of 80 of them. So they're out there. There's a bunch of them. The weird thing about this, though, the two things that got me in a way that might bug people, possibly three, depending. One, the aforementioned Metroid comparison, in that I'm okay typically with, you know, self-study exploration, but that may not be something that works for everybody, you know? People might find themselves going, well, if there's no real narrative to push me, am I going to really enjoy this game? And that's something for a person that they need to decide, because if you do need a narrative, then walk away from this game. But if you don't need a narrative to, you know, to enhance your exploration and, you know, concept, go nuts. This will be good for that. The next thing is the music. This isn't the kind of game where the music is meant to get you pumped or bopping or whatever. It's atmospheric primarily. So a lot of weird sounds, you know, sounds that's meant to give you a kind of a sort of attention in certain areas, bewilderment in others, and just a general sense of, ooh. And I guess lastly is the environments themselves. They do change up here and there, but each world area that you go to is pretty large, and the textures in those areas can get a little like old at certain points. Though there are definitely some textures also that take me directly back to like Metroid nostalgia. Like there's like one that reminds me of like the Norfair bubbly walls that are in that game. There's areas like that in this game.
Yeah, I remember those.
Yeah, like it was a very visually appealing thing, though admittedly it also kind of was annoying when you're trying to find like bombable walls, but at least in this game you get the little flying buddy guy to take care of that for you. Enemies in this game. One thing I need to point out that I almost didn't is that unlike typical games of this nature, I feel as though the enemies in this game are pretty damn aggressive. There are a number of enemy types there. When I saw them on the map, I kind of freaked out and was concerned about would I actually be able to get past them or not. It wasn't just, oh, shoot that thing, just run it and blast it. It was like, well, I could die here just by seeing that the jerk was in the room. They are very aggressive. They do not let up. And I honestly like that about the game, too. It's not impossible or insurmountable or anything like that, but you also don't just run around blindly shooting stuff a lot most of the time. You'll be attacking things, you know, with impunity. All in all, I would say this game is a worthy play if you are okay with what I mentioned earlier about the Metroid exploration concept with upgrade accessibility and the like, but with very little to guide you and very little to propel you.
Yeah, if you need your handheld, this isn't the game.
Exactly. This is like, so you've been playing these games, this game style for a while now. Have fun. And I mean, there is a map. I better point that out. There is a map. So it's not like you have to draw a map on graph paper or anything. But again, it's like we said, like there's nothing guiding you to locations. You just go and hope you discover things. That's about the gist of it.
So, well, $18, your verdict?
I would say it's honestly I don't want to say buy it because of what I said earlier, but let's go with a try. But it's a strong try.
Works for me.
It All does. Right. It's bippy bippy.
Bippy bippy?
Yeah, I don't know. I've been drinking watered down Gatorade here. I'm drunk.
All right. Next game to talk about is called Pew Paw, developed by Nelf, published by Dragius Games. It released June 12th on the Switch for $6.99. You and your dog are the lone survivors of a zombie apocalypse. Keep it that way. Luckily, you have a third teammate, an old machine gun that you can upgrade for more twin stick shooting frenzy. Chris, tell us about Pew Paw.
Okay. Did it say doggo or just dog?
Dog.
Oh, he's a doggo though.
I know.
He's a little bug. It's great. That's instantly like a winner for me because I love pugs.
They're all right, so dog. $6.99, your verdict.
I mean, come on. It's got a pug. Okay, so no, but I actually do have some things to say about this game. So it is a twin stick survival shooter. You basically, you know, I'll get to the loadout in just a second because you don't have any loadout when it begins. It's just you and a doggy and a machine gun. And the machine gun, that's a little bit of a misnomer. I mean, it looks like a machine gun. Actually, it looks like a minigun if we're going by old video game titles for guns. Because I don't know real guns. I only know what video game approximations there are. And it looks like the minigun where it like spins around and it's like, you know,
yeah.
Only instead of shooting a endless barrage of bullets, which is what you would want out of a twin stick shooter, it goes pat, 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 and then it stops to reload. This is very,
that's not a good gun.
No, this is very harrowing that it does that. So you kind of have to, and the thing is that like, you know, you start the game and you're running around a top-down view of these, you know, of course, desolate streets with zombies coming at you kind of endlessly. There's a little indicator above that lets you know what wave you're on, and it's, you know, four waves to a boss. And so, you know, you get little points where you can run around the town and look for ways to heal yourself or get more ammo, because your ammo is limited. Another thing you don't want to see in a twin-stick shooter. Fortunately, your little pug friend is extremely good at sniffing out these things, and he actually has, like, the function of the dog is that, well, A, it's invincible. So there's no harm that comes to the dog at all.
That's good.
So I'm letting people know that right now. Otherwise, this would be a much different review. But there's a little circle with arrows that appears around the dog, and those are indicators that let you know, based on their color, orange being ammo and green being a med pack, like what things have been dropped and, you know, what direction they're in so that you can go and find them, because you need to keep up your health because you have to go through, like I said, four waves of enemies and a boss. The enemies are the same per level, it seems, but the bosses are randomized. There are also four bosses. There's basically four playing fields. But you only have one that's unlocked. And, you know, you get to, like, I mean, basically you get one level, and then you get an alternate level, like the level at night or something like that. But you have to get to a certain level of experience before you can unlock that. And that's where this game gets interesting, is ranks. Okay, so getting all this out of the way, this is my main thing about this game. So when you defeat enemies, they drop money and they drop experience points. And even if you die, you get to keep all of the coins and experience points that you manage to pick up. So it's a kind of roguelite in the sense that you do get to progressively get stronger and improve your loadout, which is, again, your weapon. And your weapon is divided into several parts, and each part determines a certain stat. So, like, your accuracy is one part of the gun, your shooting, your ammo capacity is another, and your damage is another, right? So, like, you know, you keep improving different parts of the gun. You can even give them different paint jobs, which is kind of cool. I immediately went with a red, white, and blue gun because I figured that was patriotic, and then I realized it looked like a French flag. So, vive la France.
I want freedom fries, damn it.
Freedom fries. Anyways, so here's the thing. You know, your weapon has a set amount of damage, warm-up time, which is its, and rate of fire, which is, warm-up time is between when you push the button and when it fires the first bullet, which is timed, so it's not immediate, so it's, you know, and then, of course, accuracy, because you have auto-aim as well as, your ability to aim it yourself. But even if you aim it yourself, the bullet might fly off into some different direction if you don't have accuracy. So that's kind of how that goes. And here's the thing. I played this for hours, and I'm at rank 3, level 3, basically.
Damn.
My experience needs to get to the next level are 330. I'm currently at 190. Every time I go in, if I don't beat the boss, I get maybe like 10 to 14 experience points. So it is a slow crawl to getting a better gun. And the gun that you have is not good. It's not fun to play with because it's so slow and bad and inaccurate. Here's the other thing, you know, the upgrades are done through a lottery system, which I think is cool. Like, there's 6 kinds of chests that you can open, and each one costs a different amount of money. Now, money comes at you like water. Like, you just get tons of money in this game, and so you can open tons of chests, and you know, that's great. Like, you can be surprised. You know, they each have a percentage amount of like 3 tiers of like how awesome the thing is going to be when you open it. Now here is the main problem that I have with the game. When you pick up, you know, when you like open like the best chest, the mystical chest, costs 600 gold pieces. You know, I had to go into 10 different games to pick up that much lucre. And now I finally got my, you know, 35% chance to get like a mystical, beyond rare. It's called mystical, like level thing. I get it. And it's like, attack damage 40 plus like gun, whereas mine's, you know, my pea shooter is a 10. The problem is that piece has a level requirement of 17.
What?
Or more. Yes. Every single piece that you can change your gun out in with, you know, in the game has a level requirement, and 90% of them ain't one. Like, I got to rank 3 and I still can't equip anything but about 3 things that I've gotten so far.
Good lord.
So, yeah, this game absolutely locks you out of good stuff through level requirements that you can't meet unless you're able to use the worst weapon to take down, admittedly, really tough bosses. I actually spent 30 minutes trying to destroy the Seeker because he keeps sending minions after you, and you have to make a lot of distance between him and you and the town, because the whole town's your battlefield. You know, there's no, if you go into, you actually do tactically use like fences and houses and things like that to kind of hide from the enemy and vice versa. But he keeps sending like 5 or 6 minions after you, and you have to take them down first, and then you got to take him down when he's in the correct position where he's trying to shoot you, because he has an invincibility mode, because it's just one of those kind of unfair, you know, FU bosses. And yeah, I spent 30 minutes trying to get that guy, and I still lost. And I'm Jeez. Like, I could use a good gun at this point. So I have a beef with a twin stick shooter roguelite that, you know, allows you to procedurally, you know, or like to have persistent growth and yet locks that growth away behind like level requirements that are too hard to obtain. So in that sense, I'd say that's a huge red flag going into this game. You're going to spend a lot of time trying to not only pick up weapons that are better than the one that you start with, because again, the one that you start with is not fun to use, but you have to like actually have it matched to your level. I'm going to, when I get to rank 5 finally, which again, you know, I've told you the amount that I have to like go uphill to get that, then I will finally get a gun chamber that will, I think, make my gun go from 18 damage or 10 damage to 18 damage.
Oh man.
And that is going to be a whole nother day. Like I'm not going to be able to do that in a day. So that's
you have to plan around that.
Yeah, you're gonna have to plan around that. And I assume that once that starts rolling, then you start defeating bosses and opening up more levels. And of course, the nighttime levels. I did unlock nighttime on the first level because I'm rank 3, which that's the requirement there. But the next level is gonna require, you know, defeating a boss. Of course, I assume that once I do that, it's gonna start rolling a little bit more, like a bit more of a snowball effect. But man, getting that first snowball. It's like you're in Texas.
Damn. Well, yeah. All that said, $7 on it. What do you think?
It's well crafted. It's it is good. Like I said, I think that the whole system of needing to the level requirement for better gear in a twin stick shooter roguelite in this environment, in this economy, I'm gonna give it a try it. Everything else would have been a buy it because I like a lot of the stuff they went for. I like the treasure chest system. I like the gun system. I love the dog system. Like I'm absolutely enamored with that. So this is a game that's like, it's got some greats, but it's being held back by the fact that I need to invest a lot more time than I'm willing to invest in a $6 game to get anywhere.
So speed up progression, basically.
Speed up progression is my notes on that, but yeah, I will be returning to this and playing more of it. So, you know, it is fun enough that I'm still like actually, you know, plugging away at it. So
nice.
Yeah. Right, but still, well, I'm giving it a try. It
works for me.
Yeah.
All right. Next game is called Pixboy, developed by Digital Melody and Forever Entertainment, published by Forever Entertainment, released June 11th on Switch for $4.99. Pixboy is inspired by games from the first mobile devices. Immerse yourself in an interesting retro world and learn the whole story. There are 40 awesome levels. Watch out for the demanding bosses, 30 different enemies, 4 unique worlds with additional mechanics in each of them, and, well, 150 plus hidden rooms. It is a lot, but we couldn't resist to make them. Chris, tell us about Pixboy.
I assume by hidden rooms, they just mean the, like, they're just, like, part, like, just the wall melts away, and, like, you're in a little room with, like, a couple of bonus things in it. But yeah,
probably.
Yeah, I think definitely. So, yes, Pixboy. This is a, I don't know what they call these, like, where it basically, is the term like 64 by 64 or something like that, like retro game?
Mm-hmm.
Basically, they're trying to look, yeah, like it's as low res as possible. So
they're trying to make it look like a mobile phone game, like the early mobile phone games.
Yeah, like a Nokia, like game, like just above Snake.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because it actually has like a pretty good soundtrack and it's not, you know, doesn't sound very mobile, but it does look mobile. It's mobile with modern features, of course. It actually has really neat animation things that happen in it, like enemies or like power-ups like will sometimes explode into a little thing of pixels and the pixels will kind of rain down in a pattern. Actually looks really nice. But yes, the actual chosen style of the game is a little weird because you play a little boy, but as soon as you start playing the actual game, like the only details on the boy that you see are the eyes, which are 4 pixels, which make him look like a space alien. And yeah, the rest of him is another color. And yeah, because the game is monochrome. And like I said, it is done with very few pixels, but they did manage to make it look very good, which I like. So, yes, this is a stage-by-stage kind of puzzle platformer. It's one where you are, you know, the only real requirement to get through it is to get through it, just to reach the end. But, of course, along the way, there are coins that you need to pick up, and those are, you know, if you get all the coins, then that gives you, you know, you get 3 crowns. And, the way that you get those crowns is typically that you get all the coins and you get a crown. And then there's also hidden rooms and they have popsicles in them, I guess. They seem like popsicles. And if you pick up however many of those there are, it will tell you at the beginning, like how many, or it actually tells you persistently at the top of the screen, how many popsicles there are. Then you get all of those and that's another crown. And then if you do it all within a certain amount of time, then that's the third. And, yeah, you just do that through each stage. So what's cool about this game is, like what they said, is that there's, a lot of mechanics to the game that get introduced regularly. Your boy here can, jump, and if you jump a second time, it gives you a parachute, kind of a slow fall type thing so that you can, you know, collect more coins and things like that. And, then if you have a weapon and ammo, then you can push B to shoot stuff. And, that will also, you know, defeat enemies. And I guess it's a slingshot or something like that. But yeah, and occasionally you can find, like, you know, markers, like flags and stuff halfway through. And there's, like, spikes that are instant death, and there's hearts for running into enemies, which, you know, it's all very standard stuff. But what I like about it is that, like I said, there's different things at play. Like, for instance, if you're trying to get up a wall that is taller than yourself and there's a snail crawling up the wall, then you can jump on that snail and it'll cause him to stop, and then its shell becomes like a platform, and so you have to time that. And sometimes there's like two platforms where when you jump on one, the other raises up, and different things like that. There's a lot of clever things that they actually throw in here too, as you get by. And there actually is a good variety of enemies, and they actually seem to have their own personalities and stuff like that. And considering how basic the game looks, that's actually quite an achievement. Plus, the thing runs really smoothly, which I enjoy. The other cool thing is that, yes, as you proceed through the game, you can either collect like different what look like video games or mobile systems or computers, or you can just purchase them at a certain screen. With the coins that you've collected in the stages. And like, even though the game's monochrome, like they basically have like 40, I think it's 40 different. Let's see if I can find that. It is 24 different colors that you can choose from. Yeah. And each one is represented by a little like computer monitor or like a TI calculator or something like that, or a mouse.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and they're very cheap, by the way, to purchase. Like, the most expensive one's $200, but within a couple of levels, you'll end up with that much. So, yeah, lots of stuff to unlock. Of course, the good old Game Boy Green, which you can... The cool thing is, also, for every color, there's an inverted version of that color, kind of like night mode. So, which, again, makes your boy look even worse. But, you know, that's not his fault. He's doing what he can.
Alien.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, like that, you get a whole ton of content, and like I said, four worlds, you know, forest, pyramid, igloo, and a rocket ship. And yeah, tons of content there. So
nice. $5 your verdict?
I mean, $5, why not? Come on.
Yeah, I mean, really.
But yes, I do, like I said, I really do like the way this thing controls, and I like the attention to detail in, you know, such a low res game. So I would say, yes, this one is worth picking up. You know, don't assume that it's just another like retro throwback that's just there in style, but not substance. And plus it does actually get pretty hard to get through these stages. So I always like that. It's the Mutant Muds fan in me.
Mutant Muds are friggin' hard.
I love Mutant Muds though. Yeah.
I like how they came out with, like, not Mutant Muds 2, but, like, the deluxe version that just, nothing but hard levels.
Yes.
It's just like, fuck you, the video game.
And then there's a puzzle game that they came out with on the collection.
Crazy.
The re-release one. But yeah, the 3DS one is where it's at on that one, because it was such a good use of that stereoscopic 3D.
Oh, yeah.
It was the spiritual successor to Wario Land, and I love Wario Land on the Virtual Boy.
Anyway. Now I miss my Virtual Boy.
Me too. It borked.
You should never miss Virtual Boy.
No, it was great. Some of the games were great. I will stand by them.
Both of the games were great.
There you go. But say Mario's like, what was it? Mario Tennis and Wario Land.
It's Mario's Tennis, possessive. It's the only one that's called that.
He owns the game.
Wario Land is great, and I liked Red Alert, but I can definitely see where people wouldn't like that one. Because it was
all about Nestor's funky bowling.
I never got to play that one.
No one got to play that one. That's so friggin' rare.
Yeah.
I'm surprised here, because that was definitely a Nintendo Power Press. They were talking that game up.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, they had to. They were Nintendo.
And Nestor.
Yeah. But a final game to talk about tonight is called Packmaster, developed by Digital Melody and Forever Entertainment, published by Forever Entertainment, released June 11th on the Switch for $4.99. Can you pack it all in? Are you an expert packer? Only the smartest travelers can visit every country. Be the leader of the pack. Chris, I have a feeling that there's going to be packing in this game.
Yeah, and puns, apparently. So, is that the same publisher and developer as one of these other games?
Yep, same as Pits Boy.
Wow. Okay. Yep. Completely different game, so I was very, very impressed with that. Okay, so Packmaster is a, basically, like, yeah, it's a stage-by-stage puzzle game where the theme is that you are going to a certain country, you have got your backpack, and you've got your things that you need to take with you to this country, and you got to pack these bags before you can go. So it's basically as simple as, like, you can move the stick over to the object and then just kind of click and drag over. And the objects are, of course, different sizes, and they are in different configurations. That is to say, you can't rotate them or in any way make them smaller. So it's just, you know, it's basically spatial awareness. It's like, how do you get this object that is this shape into this object that is this shape?
Basically, when people are moving and they joke around that you have to be a Tetris master to pack the truck perfectly.
Yeah.
That's the game you're playing here.
Exactly. Yes. But it's kind of cool because, like, for one, it allows you to mess everything up so that you can adjust it while it's all inside of there. And it has a nice little system where when you have an object highlighted and it won't fit, it's red. And if it will fit, it's green. So you can just kind of scoot it around, like, slowly until, you know, it turns green. And then once it does, then you're done. The game's kind of funny as well because, of course, the luggage is, some of it's, like, hilariously shaped, like, weird stuff. And the actual objects are really funny because, for instance, like, the first stage is set where you're packing to go to Australia, and so you're packing boomerangs. Like, why would you pack boomerangs to go to Australia? And then one stage has you, like, splitting a slice of watermelon into four pieces and then trying to figure out where those pieces are going to go in your luggage.
Oh, God.
And then, yeah, and some of them are just, like, you know, like, if you're going to Japan, at some point you have to pack a ninja star. What are you going to do with a ninja star in Japan?
Gonna fucking throw it at someone.
I mean, yeah, that's surely you're going to be stopped by somebody. But anyway, yeah, so it's bright and colorful. It's got, like, all these cool objects and cooler, like, things. It's fun to look at. There's some other really interesting stuff, too. And this one I wish I would have gotten to actually try because, you know, I just didn't have the time to do it. This game is up to four players.
Oh,
you can do up to four multiplayer on packing bags, which I think is really interesting. I was not expecting that. The other thing is that, like I said, you control the cursor with the stick and drag them over. You actually can also play in touch mode, and it's way better. You could just
A game like this would be perfect with touchscreen.
It's very much a great touchscreen game. I mean, you know, it looks better on the TV, but you're really going to want to get your hands dirty on this one and get your screen protector dirty. But yeah, like, it is, it's just completely charming. It's got, you know, like I said, tons of levels. You know, that's all there is to it, really. It's just, it's very clever how, like I said, the different shapes that end up happening. Oh, and occasionally, actually, in a lot of stages, once you get going, you'll pack the bag, and again, these are all on a timer, right? So you'll you'll pack the bag and then it'll be like, oh, but you forgot something. And then they'll suddenly drop another item on you and you have to like rearrange the whole bag to get it to fit.
Oh, bastards.
Yeah, I know. It does little things like that. And sometimes you'll start a stage and it'll be like, you already packed this one thing and you can't move that thing. So you have to pack around that too. So it throws in little clever things like that. And I don't know. I just love this game. I'm going to keep playing it because it's fun. I just started playing it like yesterday because, yeah, I was like, well, I'm done with all my games I'm reviewing. I'm just going to play this one. And now I've played it enough where I can review it.
Yeah, we were originally going to have this one next week. And you're like, you know what? Fuck it. I could do it now.
Yeah, I was like, I put a few hours into this one, so.
And the funny thing is, next week, Purnell, you actually have another game from Digital Melody and Forever Entertainment.
Nice.
Oh my,
I mean, it's almost like they are forever entertaining us.
Well, if it's anything like these two games I've talked about, it's going to be a winner.
Yeah.
End of the show. We've hit the bottom of the barrel.
Yeah, we did.
Nonsense. No, we didn't. Scrape that mofo.
But yeah, that is the end of the episode. We are finished. We are done. Thanks again to Tim for coming on at the beginning of the show and talking about Samurai Showdown. That's on the Epic Games Store, so check that out. Thanks to y'all for coming on and chatting about the games y'all chatted about.
And cereal.
Yeah, fucking cereal. God damn. Does anyone have any final words to end the show?
Is Captain Crunch actually an admiral? I don't think his actual sleeve... The emblem on his sleeve depicts that of an actual captain.
Hmm.
Things that make you question serial politics, because I think that title was falsely attributed to him, and it deserves to be investigated.